This isn't music. This is the scream of science. 300 brake horsepower per liter of displacement, not passing in a blur at 200 miles per hour. And in the middle of the whole metal, the carbon, sits flesh and blood. These are the masters of speed. This is Formula One. Is Formula One.
And welcome to the third edition of the Lightsight Let's Go F1 podcast. And this week we will be reviewing last weekend's race at Sochi in Russia. But before we get into the fore and whereabouts of all the race, to any of you guys, have you seen the new Sky documentary called Race to Perfection that they've been doing?
I haven't seen it yet, Dan, but I have found it on Netflix.
Have you?
I have.
What, the Race to Perfection?
I think so. There's a Formula One.
There's a Netflix Formula One show, which is really good. But there's a Sky series that they've been doing about the whole history of F1.
Oh,
so that won't be on Netflix. That's been on Sky. Adam, I don't know over in the States whether you've got. Whether you've got that at all?
I have not seen it myself, mainly because I think I'm about 3,000 miles outside of Sky TV's network coverage.
Yeah, exactly. But if you can find it, it's well worth a watch. It's really good. I think there's going to be 7 episodes. They're pretty long. It's about an hour and a half long, but it goes right into the history of F1. It's really interesting. It's a really good show. So anyway, for everyone at home, you can hear the voices of joining me this week, Rich Mason and Adam Knight. So last weekend I had Rich with me, and the weekend before that I had Adam with me, and this week we've got both of them, which is excellent. So as I say, we're going to be reviewing the race in Russia. So a little bit of information about the Sochi track. So it's a 3.6 mile track around the Olympic Park in Sochi, in Russia, where they had the Winter Olympics in 2014, I think. It's a temporary street track, which means it's often dusty at the early part of the weekend during practice and things. Something that I think Lewis Hamilton found was going off wide or going deep into a few corners. But I think that's him finding out where the grip is throughout the weekends, and he normally comes sort of good come qualifying time. It's a Hermann Tilke design track, which often fills people with dread. Rich, Adam, what are your views on Hermann Tilke tracks?
Not exciting. Well, they're consistent, I'll give them that.
They are consistent.
There's always a long straight and a very tight corner. So.
Yeah. I think he has got better as the years have gone on. Some of his later tracks are better. But yeah, certainly some of the earlier tracks weren't that exciting and didn't induce racing as such. So Bottas often goes well at the Sochi track. And this race, he actually ended up winning under different circumstances. I mean, Hamilton had a penalty, which we will go into as the podcast goes on. But I'm not sure whether Bottas would have beaten Hamilton this weekend had Hamilton not had the penalty, or whether he still could have. It's something to think about, but there you go. Now, one thing we did see this weekend, particularly during qualifying and during the race, is that if somebody went over the track limits, it was enforced at this race. So if they went over the track limits, they had a either their lap deleted in qualifying, or they had to go round some bollards in the race. Now, my question, I think, to you, Rich, is why didn't they do this at every single track? So this is a bit of my rant. So, you know, before I've been ranting about tyres, now I'm going to rant about track limits. Like, if you can do it at a track, why don't they do it every track? Why do they not adhere to the track limits at all points around all tracks?
It's a very good question, Dan, and
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I don't understand why it's not done at all tracks. I think it's kind of nice that this weekend it was enforced at Sochi. I think the runoff areas and what you do once you've exceeded track limits is another angle to that, certainly on turn one or two. But yeah, I don't understand it, because at other tracks you've got such massive runoff areas, and you know, this is, you know, the modern circuits that you have now, you have these huge tarmac runoff areas, and they do, and there is definitely in some cases an advantage to be gained of carrying more speed when you know the track limits aren't being enforced, so you can drift just outside of the track limits and not get a penalty. So I think they should be enforced more rigorously, but they need to be consistent, and it needs to be consistent across all circuits. And
one of the things that really annoys me about it is that at some tracks, if they go wide around a corner, it's not enforced. And they often say the reason why they don't enforce it is because it's the longer way round, therefore a driver isn't gaining an advantage. Now, every Formula One racing driver knows that they're not going to do something that is not going to give them an advantage. So when you see them going wide at certain corners, it's because they're able to carry more speed and thus grab an advantage. I just don't get it. Adam, what's your thoughts on it?
I couldn't give you more. I think that's half the problem with the rule, is it's not so much the enforcement, it's the lack of consistency. It doesn't matter whether you think they're getting an advantage or not. If they're outside the track limits, they're outside the track limits. And, you know, try exceeding the track limits in Singapore and see what happens to you.
Yeah, exactly, mostly, yeah.
Mostly you're going to wreck both your front and back suspension.
You're just going to end up in the wolf.
Exactly. Right, so therefore, you should be assuming that every track limit has a dirty, great gravel pit or a nasty wall that's going to bring your race to an end pretty quickly.
Exactly.
I don't know why this subject keeps coming up. You hear the radio pundits, the television pundits, everybody talks about it. Yeah. I just don't understand why it's not enforced.
Yeah, I agree. It's just crazy. But anyway, going into qualifying then. So in Q1, you had Raikkonen, Latifi, Magnussen and Giovinazzi all going out in Q1. George Russell actually pulled his car through into Q2. So, you know, getting that Williams through into Q2 again, I think Russell's doing an absolute sterling job at Williams this season.
Agreed.
Yeah, definitely.
He's the Merc driver in waiting, isn't he? Let's be fair.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And then in Q2, you had... So Hamilton had his first run deleted due to track limits, which is fantastic. And then you had Vettel crash sort of before or while Lewis was on another lap to try and get a time in, which then put Hamilton and Mercedes under quite a bit of pressure because Hamilton was running out of time and he hadn't set a time yet. Now, the one question that I'm unsure of is, so when Lewis came back into the pits after his first run, knowing he had his time deleted, I don't know why Merck waited so long to get him back out.
I don't...
A safety car is always a danger at Sochi, isn't it?
Exactly. I don't know why they didn't let him stay out and just put in another run. Get a banker in. In fact, if you listen to the team radio, that's exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He told them, let me stay out, let me get one in. And I think it's because they were so worried about the fact that he was on a set of race start tires, right? That they didn't want him to go then go out and set it and then have to actually start the race on a set of tires that were an additional lap old, knowing that how rough the tire management was going to be on Sunday.
I mean, I've done a bit of investigation into it, and apparently Toto Wolff has said it in one of his conferences that they hadn't fueled Hamilton's car for 2 laps. So when he said, you know, I need to stay out, they couldn't keep him out because of the fuel. But that still begs the question, that Merc was so fast, you know, they could have fueled him for 2 laps, still got through quite comfortably in Q2. I just think they just put themselves under undue pressure, and it really showed. You know,
absolutely.
It was crazy. I just think sometimes I don't know, Merck have this sort of, Mercedes had this kind of brain fade, or because they used to be at the top all the time, sometimes they don't know how to react quickly to things, perhaps. I don't know, not sure.
I think sometimes the strategists have they're so buried into the data and the strategy and everything that sometimes it needs an occasion to look up and see what's actually happening on track.
Yeah,
to be agreed. A little bit more reactive, you know.
Yeah, agreed. So anyway, you ended up with then in Q2 you had Leclerc, Kvyat, Stroll, Russell and Vettel all out in Q2. So that's pretty poor by Vettel again, but obviously it's because he crashed, which is obviously poor anyway. And you had Stroll going out in Q2, which again, I'm probably one of his worst critics, but I don't think that's good enough from Lance Stroll in a car that should be in Q3.
I probably agree with you. You know, we talked about it last week, and you are a fierce critic of his, and also Sergio in the other Racing Point as well.
But he qualified well, didn't he? And he had a good race.
He qualified well, and he had a good race. I did actually pick up a couple of statistics just to sort of back you up a little bit. So Monza,
yeah,
a circuit that doesn't change. 2020, Lance Stroll did his fastest lap in the race was a 1:23.89.
Yeah.
His fastest, that was it. That was this year. The fastest lap from a 2019 Mercedes, as we know, it is the pink Mercedes at Monza. Lewis Hamilton did a 1:21.7 and Valtteri did a 1:22.8. So a good second quicker than Lance Stroll. Sergio, in fact, was even slower. He did a 1:24.3 at Monza this year. So, and just for contrast, at Monza 2019 in the old Racing Point, Lance Stroll did a 1:24.165. But Sergio did a 1:23.7. So,
yeah,
you know, pretty much, you know, they might as well be in last year's Racing Point as opposed to the pink Mercedes. I'm not buying it. It's there's something they've done to that car. They've jiggered it up somehow.
So, but Adam,
yes, it should be further up. Absolutely.
I agree. So, Adam, do you agree that if there were two better drivers in that Racing Point this year, they would have had a few better results, do you think? Or do you think the drivers are doing okay?
No, I think it's atrocious. I mean, I think that not only did Lance go out so badly, he had all the upgrades.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Andy took the second lot of upgrades after he busted the first lot.
Yeah.
So if you're Perez, you know, if you're Perez, you've got to be saying, like, dude, what's a guy got to do to catch a break? So... Yeah, I'm not going to sit here personally and criticize Chico, but yeah, I'm not a big fan of Lance, and to be honest, I don't know anybody that is. Must be nice when daddy buys you a racing team, right? I mean, what are you going to do?
I was going to say
the one thing Checo had to do in order to catch a break was to emerge from the
right.
Emerge from the sack of Mr. Stroll.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sergio had a great weekend. I think he had a great drive on Sunday. I mean, we'll get into that in a little bit, but it wasn't exciting. But I mean, he still put that car probably in the best place he was likely to get that car. So
agreed.
I mean, fair play to him. You know what I mean? So yeah Sergio, agree. I'm not going to criticize Lance all day.
Agree. So then. In qualifying three, you ended up with Hamilton on pole, Verstappen in second, which was interesting, and Bottas third. Then you had Perez, Ricciardo, Sainz, Ocon, Norris, Gasly, and Albon. So I don't think it was good enough from Albon again in qualifying. And actually, looking at it, probably wasn't good enough from Valtteri Bottas to be third behind Verstappen at that track either.
So I agree. And here's a quick stat, because we know he came perilously close to not making it. When was the last time Hamilton didn't make it into Q3?
Oh, that's an
any guesses?
One. I am going to guess Sochi last year? He was on that. I don't know. No idea.
It was Germany 2018.
Yeah.
Was that when his car broke down? Did he have a fire?
Yeah.
That's right. I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I agree. I agreed. It was it wasn't good enough from Bottas. There is one potential excuse that he could have made and reason that he could have given, but I'll talk about that maybe when we actually talk about the race itself. Yeah. But my goodness me, didn't Lewis ever put in a lap? I mean, from having that, need to go at the end of Q2, and then all of a sudden he just goes out in Q3 and just goes purple, 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 and he's what, 8 tenths clear?
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
Nuts. Yeah, it was. It was a hell of a lap, really. And unfortunately, pole at Sochi isn't always advantageous, is it?
No.
What? And I hate to take the F1 bingo line, but if you look at their comments of it's a long run down to turn one, in Sochi's case, it's a long run down to turn two, because there really isn't a turn one.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a kink,
right,
isn't it?
Right, you go through that one pretty much flat out.
Yeah. And they can get a great slipstream. You know, it's happened quite the past few years, really, and the person in either second or third often drafts the way past whoever was on pole. Valtteri almost did it, and he almost took Hamilton at turn two. But Hamilton, I think, did some really good defensive driving there. Apparently, I don't know if you heard this, but Valtteri put it down to a bee striking his visor.
I just hear that.
Just before he got to the corner.
The only thing that he could have actually taken claim for, I don't think he did anything yesterday other than that initial what looked like a big old lunge to try and get Hamilton on the first lap. It didn't work out, and then he even gave that up to a bee hit my visor and I missed my braking.
Yeah.
It was a bee with a Kalashnikov, wasn't it? It was a Russian bee with his visor. I agree. He had a very, very good chance, and you could tell Hamilton knew it as well after qualifying. On Saturday, he was like, yeah, pole position. He looked like a man who qualified third.
Yeah.
Because he knew what the slipstream effect can be. And I think it just shows what Hamilton did off the line was very, very, very good to stay ahead.
Yeah, agreed. Now, had we not had what happened just before the race started, I think it would have been a Hamilton victory and we'd probably be talking about him matching Schumacher's record. However, before the race started, Lewis did two separate practice starts at the end of the pit lane, which was illegal and caused him to have two separate 5-second penalties, which had to be taken at his first pit stop. Now,
It was illegal.
Sorry?
I'm not sure it was illegal.
Well, apparently there is a code, and I can't remember the code number. Where he did it was illegal, but you can do it in the pit lane, but there was a point in the pit lane before where you could do it. Now,
yeah, there's a very clear parking practice spot, and that's where you do your, practice start.
It does a 3-point turn, does he, Adam, is that?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah. Exactly right, yeah. There's a practice start box, and where you do your practice start is in the practice start box. And actually, unfortunately, there is actually one person that ultimately you have to hold accountable for this, and it is Bono.
Yeah, Pete Bonington, which is Lewis's race engineer, isn't it?
Was it Bono or was it Shovlin? Because Andrew Shovlin said Lewis asked if he could go a bit further. So Bono would have been talking to Shovlin as well. And I think the thing that's confused a lot of people with this is that the regulations refer to the, and I'm actually looking at them now on the FIA website, is the practice start area. And there's two regulations, and 19.1 in the race director's notes is that practice starts may only be carried out on the right-hand side after the pit exit lights, and for the avoidance of doubt, this includes any time the pit exit is open for the race, drivers must leave adequate room on their left for another driver to pass. And as far as I'm concerned, Lewis did all of that. It doesn't specify how far after the pit exit lights you are able to do your practice start. 19.2 says, for reasons of safety and sporting equity, cars may not stop in the fast lane.
That's right, yeah.
Time,
yeah.
The pit exit, which he did not do. He was on the right-hand side. So actually, the regulation refers to the race director's notes of that particular event. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Lewis actually adhered to them. And I think the notes themselves aren't particularly well written. And I think this is where there was a number of stewarding cock-ups this weekend. And I don't think it puts this... I think the ambiguity, you know, leaves the sport, you know, not looking too fantastic. I mean, there are people that will say he gained an advantage because obviously where everybody else had been doing their starts, they'd already rubbered it down. So the reason they do these practice starts is to engage the electronics that operate the clutch.
Yeah.
It's all fly-by-wire these days. So if he was to do that on a heavily rubbered area, that's not hugely reflective of the start grid. So if you can find somewhere which has got less rubber on it, that's more reflective of the start grid. And as we know from Saturday, Lewis was absolutely wanting to make sure he went off like a stabbed rat because he knew what the slipstream was like. So, you know, was he trying to gain an advantage? Well, you know, you could argue that he was just trying to maximize what was available because according to the director's notes, version 3, I may add, on the FIA website, he adhered to them to the letter. And, you know, he also had that confirmed from Bono, as you said, Adam. And I think he'd also been in touch with Andrew Shovlin as well, and they'd spoken about it.
Yeah, and I think that's the hardest thing, right? I mean, I can understand a little ambiguity coming in when you've got a racing incident or something that's happening on track during the race. When it's something that happens before the race, that's completely procedural and should be extremely clear cut. These are the rules. You broke the rule, you're done, and this is the penalty or not, right? And I think that was the hardest thing because, yeah, of course he was trying to gain an advantage and for all the reasons that you just stated. And I think that's why he came on and said, hey, you know, Bono, are we still good to do it this far out?
Yeah.
Bono came back and said, yeah, regardless of where he's getting his information from, he came on clearly, you know, A1 affirm, you're good to go.
That's it.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah, but, yeah. No, you're right, yeah.
I'm not sure it's right, but...
Yeah, agreed.
And then, of course, if you're going to penalise them once, then you have to penalise them the second time.
Of course, right? Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting to see how those notes are written in Germany in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
A little bit more specific.
So, of course, Lewis had those two penalties. He was also starting on the disadvantaged soft tyre for the race because of what happened in qualifying two. So he was on the back foot a little bit with his tactics, I think. And funnily enough, Lewis had one of those, what I would call, messy or grumpy weekends. You know, he has about one of these a season, and it just everything seems to go wrong for him and Mercedes at that weekend, and then he gets very, very grumpy, and, you know, as the weekend goes on, you can see it all happening, and he just makes bad choices or whatever else. I mean, I don't know, Rich... Why do you think Lewis has these weekends? And does he need them to be able to propel himself for the rest of the season?
I think there's possibly an element of he gets a lot of motivation. I think you'll see him coming out in Germany next week, in a couple of weeks' time, firing on all fours, six cylinders they have now, don't they? he sets the bar so high for himself. I mean, you know, let's be honest, a bad weekend and he's still third. Having been he was ninth, tenth after that 10-second penalty, and he's had to make his way through the pack again. He does set the bar very high, and I think he does take a lot of things personally. Shall we say? I think there's conspiracy that comes in of all they're trying to. Well, because he said, didn't he? He said in the interview afterwards, it's like, you know, they're just trying to stop me. You know?
I saw that same.
Hint of like. You know, they don't like, you know, I think they're very aware since Chase Carey came in, it is more about the show. And if there's somebody who's always at the front of the show, it's the same every weekend. You know, there's still that legacy of when, you know, Michael Schumacher was winning all the time with Ferrari. Everybody said it got boring. And I just think he gets into his head, I think, sometimes that that, you know, stewards or the way everything's set up is out to get him. But but you know, you're right, Dan. He does this, you know, once, possibly twice a season. You know, but I'm pretty sure they'll be back at Brackley. They'll put the arm around him, and he'll, you know, he'll come out for Germany, and it'll be absolutely, you know, could well be business as usual.
Now, interestingly, Netflix were with the Mercedes team this weekend, filming their Drive to Survive series.
That's what I meant, by the way. When I was talking about Netflix earlier on, it was Drive to Survive.
That's right. Now, before the weekend, I saw a tweet from Mercedes saying that they hope they don't get the Netflix jinx, because when was the last time that Netflix were filming with the Mercedes team? Did anyone know?
Yeah, it was that god-awful weekend, and I can't remember which GP it was, because they had an absolute shocker.
Germany last year.
With Germany.
When both Lewis and Bottas ended up crashing in the wet, and Lewis ended up at the back of the track and all sorts.
Yep.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So there you go. There you go. But there you go. So whether it takes their mind off things, or I don't know, it seems funny that it's happened twice now, really. But, you know, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Now, funny enough, also at the end of the race, I had a text from somebody who doesn't really watch F1 and dislikes Hamilton, as I think a lot of people do. Now, he said, Hamilton doesn't like being interviewed when he doesn't win. He's a really bad loser. Adam, your view on Hamilton, you know, is he a bad loser, and does that turn people off to him?
I hope not. I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt in these situations, and I also think that it's not so much he's a bad loser, he's just such a killing instinct winner. He wants to win at all costs. But you know, fortunately, on the right side of the legalities within the sport, so he just wants to win. He's got that shark type hunt out the blood. I want to win it, and for every single race. So when he doesn't, he's disappointed, and I think some of that comes across as potential bad sportsmanship. But you have to remember that to reach the level in a sport that he or athletes in other sports have attained, you've got to just be an outright killer when you're in that seat behind the wheel. And it's got to be the be-all and end-all. Otherwise, you're not going to be a Lewis Hamilton. You're going to be a Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah, problem with bees, won't you? That'll be
easy. Exactly.
I totally agree with you, Adam. I think actually the interesting thing I was thinking while you were saying there, I think when he gets really brassed off and he has that kind of, you know, down kind of sore loser kind of atmosphere going on, is when he feels there are things that have gone wrong over the weekend that have been within his or the team's control to a certain degree.
Sure.
Because I've seen him after races where he has perhaps only come second or third. You know, he's hit the podium still, but he's had to battle through. And he has said, look, you know, I had a really great afternoon. Yeah, it wasn't quite what we wanted. And he's been quite magnanimous. I think that's happened more recently. So I think there was a real, you know, I think he really did feel that there were a lot of issues over the weekend that really should not have happened. And that he's, you know, that's what he feels aggrieved about, because I do think he has got a little bit more circumspect and a little bit more, mature in his response when things perhaps don't go the way you would want them to.
But I also
agree with you, mate. He's absolutely, you know, I don't recall John McEnroe ever being a particularly gracious loser. right. You know, you've got to have that killer instinct. You have, else you're going to just sort of, you know, what's the point in being there?
Yeah, and I think that's where I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, because I just hope that the bad side of you, if you want to call that you see of him now and again, is not the times that he's letting the curtain slip, and you're actually getting a glimpse into what he's truly like. But I just don't believe that's the way he is truly like, mostly because no way you convinced me that Toto Wolff would put up with that kind of attitude on a consistent basis. So correct. I think you know, I think Toto gets him. He lets him have his explosive weekend. You know, he lets him, you know, blame anybody and everybody apart from himself once a season. And then the rest of it, you know, he knows that he will bounce back. I mean, how many times have we seen him have that kind of rough start to a year? Everything seems to be going wrong. He kind of, you know, self-reflects, you know, gets it together, and then there's just no coming near him for the next X number of races, if not the rest of that season. So, absolutely. Yeah, I hope that that's what we're seeing, and there's not a, you know, a different side.
I tend to agree with you. I've often wrapped my brains through the years why Hamilton is sort of disliked by a lot of people. I can't really remember any other driver that is, I mean, he's liked by a lot of people, but there are a hell of a lot of critics out there that seem to sort of berate him all the time. I just think sometimes he had the right, I think, to be angry about what happened this weekend, but perhaps sometimes he just needs to think, you know, for the fans, you know, just give an interview that is, you know, give a bit back to the fans, because the fans are there to hear from their heroes and from their drivers. So, you know, when he's asked what went wrong, instead of just giving the sort of deadpan, well, you know, nothing we can really talk about, really, you know, actually give the fans something back, I think. It's a hard one because he is angry and it's in the moment and they're really, you know, charged up. But, I don't know. I just think sometimes you can perhaps give a bit back. Like he does when he wins, you know. But
yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah. So anyway, with the issues that Lewis had, Bottas controlled the race pretty much from up front. He had very little to do, really. He was, you know...
Well, he only had to drive around corners at 180 mile an hour.
Yeah, exactly. You had Verstappen in second, and that's pretty much how that race was for those two through to the checkered flag. So you had a first lap safety car. I thought it was going to be another red flag again. I thought we were going to have a myriad things to talk about yet again.
And you get to use the word stasis or stasis.
That's right. But anyway, so we had Carlos Sainz's crash. Now that turn two is quite a tight turning, and track limits were enforced. So during the race, they were told that if they go wide, they have to go round the bollards because it's a way of slowing them down so they can't just put the foot down and, you know, race on through. But at this particular corner, that was quite a tough call because the corner's going quite steeply round to the right. And if you're battling another car and you end up going wide, like Sainz did, like Grosjean did, like a few people did throughout the race, you've got to then turn that car quite violently to the left and then back round to the right round the bollards and miss that wall that juts out. And what Carlos Sainz did was not miss the wall that jutted out. And, you know, I think the blame has to lie with him for that. But I also think, you know, it's quite a dodgy corner that, and those bollards didn't help, I think. And I think you saw it on quite a few occasions. But, yes, so you had Carlos crashing, and then you had Lance Stroll crashing out. He was hit by Leclerc, actually. I don't know if he was.
Yeah, he was.
In an identical manner in which, was it Lewis that hit Albon in the same way?
Yes, you're right, yes. Was that at Brazil?
I can't recall where it was. It was this year. There's something on Twitter which is playing the two videos side by side.
Oh, okay.
Almost identical.
Was that at Melbourne, perhaps?
It was the one that Lewis got a penalty for.
Oh, okay, I'm with you. Yeah, I can't remember the race, but yeah.
I can't either, but he got a 5-second penalty for hitting Albon.
Yeah, I think Leclerc should have got
exactly the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, isn't it? Because a few sort of different podcasts and commentaries things have really praised Leclerc for his drive at the weekends. But yeah, it was pretty messy of him to to hit Stroll and put somebody out of the race, I think he should have got a penalty, and I think his weekends would have been a bit different, really.
Yeah.
So anyway, as I say, Bottas went on to win the race. Now, I don't... So did you guys hear what Valtteri said over the radio when he won the race?
Yes, I did.
So it was to my... Yep, it was to my critics, F you. Now, this Sorry, go on, Adam.
I was going to say, which wasn't particularly original because he already used that exact line the last time he won a race.
Exactly. Now, what I was going to ask you is, yes, Bottas has had his critics this year. And, you know, I'm sure he's never listened to this podcast, but I've also been a critic of him. Did it make him look a bit silly saying that? Because, okay, he won the race, but he won the race under strange circumstances, and he's only won two races this year, and he's 45 points behind Lewis in the championship. I mean, his critics are pretty right, aren't they?
I'd agree.
I don't think he did a single thing yesterday to silence any critics.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He didn't win that race. The race just came to him because of other things that were happening around him.
Yeah, agree.
I just don't. And then to top it off with making people realize that you weren't doing something brave on lap one into corner two. You didn't outbrake Lewis. You just hit a B and missed the breaking point altogether. And then when you do finally cross the line, you're making this big statement to your critics. It's not even original. It's the same as before. It just felt a little bit.
It's not as if he dominated the whole weekend and, you know, came out fighting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll tell you.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I mean, if you look at what Lewis did in Q2, that's focus, you know, coming across the line with 1 second to go and to bang in the lap he did to do Q3. Well, he got through in Q2, but then to bang the lap in, he did in Q3.
He was half a second ahead of Bottas in quali, wasn't he?
He was compromised. And that's a track that Bottas likes and goes well at.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, I think you're right, Adam. The race came to Bottas because of things that went on the opposite side of the garage. You know, he ended up on not the optimal tyre at the start. But even then, even with Lewis on the soft tyre, He couldn't get him into turn two. I'm sorry, Valtteri, but I think the fact that he felt the need, or certainly the emotion to let that out, shows that he can be a little fragile emotionally. When we've said in years past, oh, well, that's it, Lewis has broken Valtteri by race four or race five or whatever. It shows that that's probably been the case, you know?
Yeah, agree. Okay, so obviously Bottas won, and Verstappen came second, and Lewis was third on the podium, which actually is a pretty good recovery drive for Lewis, with being on the wrong strategy from the start and having those penalties. So it's a good recovery drive for him, really. So going down the rest of the positions, so you had Perez in fourth, which I thought was a really good performance for Perez. I know I've criticized him in the past, but it was a good drive. Ricardo ended up in fifth. So that Renault's getting close. Racy. It's getting racy, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. I thought he had a real good weekend, actually. And, you know, a lot of people will say that, you know, if you look at Daniel Ricciardo's response to him getting a 5 second penalty, he was very well, I'll just go faster. You know, it was a good response, but then it was something that, you know, that they all knew that exceeding track limits at that point. But he had a good weekend. Ricardo did.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's my eldest daughter's favourite. She loves Daniel Ricciardo. Yeah. I don't know why. She's only five.
There you go.
She just likes him. There you go.
Yeah. And then you had Leclerc in sixth in the Ferrari, which is actually a brilliant drive in that Ferrari car, because, you know, I don't think it's worth that sixth place, but it was a brilliant drive, but he did hit Stroll, you know, on that first lap. So I suppose my question to either of you really is, it's undoubted that Leclerc is a fantastic talent. I do think he's been slightly messy recently. He had that crash at Monza, didn't he? He crashed into Stroll this weekend. You know, is he having one of those sort of weekends that young drivers often do, where he's just got to make sure he keeps his head sometimes?
I think possibly.
Or is he prone to this?
I don't know. What do you think, Adam?
No, I definitely think it's off. I think it's all a part of his learning. I'm a big Leclerc fan, which is amazing for me because I'm not a big Ferrari fan. Yeah. I really hope that Ferrari don't take him as a personality and as a person down and destroy what could be a huge future figurehead of the sport.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things. I think there's a lot of turmoil going on in Ferrari at the time, and I think that he's pushing boundaries. He's learning. He's overdriving that Ferrari as much as Alonso did when
I think he's doing. Yeah.
And I think when you do that, you're good. Yeah, there are going to be some things that don't just work.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree. I think part of it is he is driving extremely well in that car, which is not, you know, they've admitted it's not a great car. I think Vettel has clearly checked out, so I don't think there's much of a yardstick to be measuring against there. It'll be interesting when science comes in. But he is still in the learning phase. I think, you know, we've had this weekend that the penalties, the two penalties that Lewis Hamilton received, he temporarily got 2 points on his racing license for that.
Yes.
Which put him on 10 points, and at 12 points, you get a race ban.
Correct.
Now, the sensible thing has prevailed, and they've rescinded those 2 points because it was to do with the fact that he had the instruction
from Mercedes,
the okay from the team, so that's cost him €25,000. However, you know, I don't recall Leclerc getting a reprimand for driving 2 laps of the Spanish Grand Prix without any seatbelts on.
Yes. And that's true.
A huge contravenes the regulations in possibly the most, you know,
dangerous way. Or
dangerous, the most dangerous health and safety kind of, you know, just don't do that.
Yeah.
And people have had race bans for that, but he didn't even get any points on his license for that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's inconsistent application of the regulations is something that does grind my gears as well as you, Dan.
I mean, here's one thing that, as we say, Leclerc is in the learning phase. Well, perhaps he's learnt from Vettel how to crash every other race. You know, maybe Vettel's passing his knowledge on to him before he leaves Ferrari. But there you go.
Quite possibly, yeah.
So there you go. Anyway, so moving down the order, you had Ocon in 7th. You had Kvyat in 8th, and Gasly in 9th. I think Gasly, although he finished behind his teammate Kvyat, he actually had a really good race. There were some good overtakes from Gasly, so I think he's continuing his good season.
And importantly, he finished one place ahead of Albon.
He did, yes. I think Albon was slightly hampered by strategy, and Red Bull brought him in very early, joined the safety car, I think, put him on hards, and then left him out on hard tyres for most of the race. So Albon being in 10th, but I think he was a little bit hampered by strategy. You had Giovinazzi in 11th, so agonisingly close to getting some points for Alfa Romeo. Magnussen in 12th, which I think he had a great drive in that Haas. Vettel in 13th, as we said there. You know, I think it's poor again. Yeah. Any of you have any reasons why? I mean, yes, perhaps he has checked out, but, you know, what is the story going on there with Vettel and Ferrari? Because he seems to be just back in the midfield every single race.
Yeah, I think the gap between him and Leclerc is extremely telling. And, you know, it's probably a couple of things. He's checked out. He's, you know, he's thinking about green overalls. And, you know, I think Lawrence Stroll, the owner of what will be Aston Martin Racing, needs to make sure he turns up, fired up and ready to go next year. And the other thing is, you know, he's now got, I don't know if he's got one or two children, but he's got kids now. And I think that does change things a little bit. In the mindset as well, but oddly, you'd probably be driving a bit safer and not crashing so much if that was the case.
Yeah, very true.
You know,
very true.
So I don't know. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, same thing. I think he's checked out. He's acting like a spoiled teenager. He's acting like what I've come to expect Ferrari to develop their drivers into, unfortunately. That's just the way they are. That's where kind of great racing drivers go to die. I don't know why that is, but yeah, I used to I liked him in his earlier career, Toro Rosso, the Red Bull years. I just never saw this side of him when he was with those teams. Okay, arguably at Red Bull, he was pretty much winning all the time. I get it; it's a different situation. But yeah, I don't understand why he's really sulking the way he is.
Interesting what you say there. So, yes, he clearly has checked out. But has he checked out because he knows no matter what he does, Leclerc perhaps is the faster driver? And so he's checking out so much that people are talking about him already being checked out rather than talking about Leclerc's faster than him. So he's losing to his teammate there, and he was shown up at Red Bull when Ricciardo went there.
I think that's absolutely an element, without a doubt, without a doubt.
Yeah,
that's a fair point, actually, Dan. I think there's a few drivers that perhaps just don't get on with the change that the car's had, you know, the wider tyres and everything else. You know, the years he was at Red Bull, clearly that chassis and those regulations really suited him. The other one who likes to crash a lot is Romain Grosjean. And
he does a good crash, doesn't he?
He does, but if you look at his career pre, you know, certainly Formula 2, and when he was driving, when it was Lotus F1, you know, he put some good results in. I just don't think he just doesn't suit. You stick him in a, you put Romain Grosjean in sports cars, and he's literally almost unstoppable. He's really, really good. He's really good. I just don't think they get on with it. Another little fact is that Hamilton, although he thankfully had those points rescinded, he's on 8 points on his super license. Grosjean's on 0. How is that possible? How is that a fact?
I have no idea.
Because he really does throw it around at a few people. I'm just like, there's clearly stewards need to look at what they're applying penalties for over the season, I think.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
There you go.
So anyway, then, so from 14th downwards, it finished up with Raikkonen, Norris, Latifi, Grosjean and Russell. And then obviously Sainz and Stroll did not finish us. Due to their crashes on the first lap.
I thought Norris was the man yesterday. I don't mean to take you off your stride, but I really, really, really liked watching Lando yesterday, as I do every week. Mm. Right from the restart after the first safety car.
Yeah.
And he took Albon right there and then.
Yeah.
After on that restart, I think that's telling.
That's true.
Then some of the battle they had around, I want to say it was lap 46-ish, 45, 46.
Was that with the Williams that was in the mix as well?
It was, yeah. There you had, I think it was Norris, it was Gasly, Albon, maybe Russ was in there. But I'm bearing in mind, I think it was lap 46 and his tires were 45 laps old. Yeah. I know he dropped down the order pretty quick after that, and then you know, they really fell off the edge. But the fact that he could even be involved in that particular battle with 45 lap old tires was unbelievable. I thought he had a heck of a drive, and you know, it didn't really seem to get that much of a mention.
I think that's going to be an exciting team next year when Ricciardo joins him at McLaren.
It's going to be really exciting, I think. Really exciting. I mean,
really like Lando. He's a good driver.
Yeah, Norris, without a doubt, is a top class driver, and he's going to mature. I think he's got a good future in F1.
The only issue I have, Adam, is that he sounds less Bristolian than you do.
That's very true.
It is very true.
I'm putting it down to the American vowels have made my accent sound actually worse than it really is.
Hey, that's good. But yeah, no, he's a Bristol boy as well, Norris. So yeah, well, I'm all aboard on the Lando train, I think.
Yeah, I think Lando Norris is definitely a lights out, let's go F1 podcast favourite.
He is indeed. He's, and I think the is it Craig Williams? Who's currently at McLaren? Head of McLaren.
Seidel, isn't it?
Seidel, that's it. Yeah, he was raving about him. Just said the guy just doesn't really make mistakes. He's an extremely, at his early years, accomplished race driver.
Yeah, he's very good. F1. He is very good. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that kind of brings us to the end of the race as such. So just to an open question for both of you. Did you enjoy the race at Sochi? It's sometimes not often that excitable race, really, but what do you think of it this year? Rich, come to you first.
I think after about, it sort of settled down. I think, yeah, obviously the start was just insane. And that was good fun. The shenanigans at turn two with people, you know, Ricardo. I mean, I can't understand what happened between Ricardo and Ocon when he needed to let him by and he exceeded track limits and all that was just a bit of an internal cock up. Yeah. So there were instances throughout the race. And I think, Adam, you're right, that sort of around, you know, lap 45, 46, that midfield battle was great. But once the penalty had been applied to Lewis, it sort of waned off a little bit towards.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think, but it was all around. It was a good watch. I didn't nod off. Put it that way.
Yeah, that's not.
Because I have to watch the highlights on Sunday night. you know, it's always a danger. You see.
Yeah, I mean, you nodded off at my house on Thursday after a bottle of wine, didn't you? So you know.
I did actually do that. Yes, that's very true.
I think I also did as well. But
yes, there you go.
That's fair. Adam, did you enjoy Sochi?
I did. Actually, I did. For about the first two or three laps.
Yeah.
And then, to be fair, the safety car in the first lap, it's almost to be expected. There's been 5 lap one safety cars in the last 6 Russian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So that was kind of expected. And then after that, really, if it wasn't for the back and forth talking about the penalties and that, you know, the turn two bollards, there really wasn't a lot else going on. It was okay. I mean, I didn't hate it. But I mean, it's pretty much what I've come to expect of Sochi, really. You know, it's going to be, okay, it was all right.
Yeah.
I did hear one stat about the Russian Grand Prix that I was surprised initially, but then I thought about it a little bit more. I said, okay, I guess it's not that surprising. And that is that the Russian Grand Prix is only one of 2 Grand Prix that for every running of that Grand Prix, there's been a home driver.
Okay.
Hmm. Good stuff.
The other one, not surprisingly, is the British Grand Prix, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the only one of two, which I didn't really think about. And then, of course, then just one other stat that we didn't mention yet was the record equaling 322nd race start for Kimi Räikkönen.
Of course, yes. He equaled Rubens Barrichello, didn't
Correct.
He?
Correct. Yep.
Gosh, he has been in the sport a long time, hasn't he?
He has been in the sport a long time.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, fair play to Räikkönen, and I hope he goes on next year. I like having him in the sport.
He's good value, and he's got to keep his ice cream freezer stocked up at home, hasn't he? Really?
Yeah, definitely. He's
definitely good for a sound bite, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
You can often get anything out of him, but when they do, it's always a blinding comment that you know it's going to be plastered everywhere.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a little bit of a better race than it was, especially when you looked at the starting grid and you had in the top 6 you had 5 different constructors, which was probably the first that we've had that many for a long time.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe that was going to mix it up a little bit more, but yeah, ultimately it came a little bit. It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay. There was a bit of excitement because of other reasons, not because of the track. And
exactly.
It made it exciting. But yep. If you look at sort of Bottas and Verstappen out front, that's what the race could have been without all the other intrigue, I suppose, if it didn't happen with Hamilton and things. But I quite enjoyed it. It was pretty good. So looking forward, so in 2 weeks' time, we are going to the Nürburgring. Which is going to be an interesting one. So, we normally go to the Nürburgring in the summer, and we are now going in what is pretty much mid to late autumn. So, I think the weather could be a real factor at that track in 2 weeks' time.
Totally agree. Even if it's just temperatures, even if you don't get the rain added in, I think the temperature alone, it's going to drastically affect all of the team stats on tyre management at that place.
Yeah, I agree. So, a quick little prediction. So, what do you think the top 3 are going to be in Nürburgring, Rich?
I think Hamilton will come back. and I think he'll be at the top of the tree. Obviously, Verstappen won it last year, so I think he'll be in there. But I think we'll get somebody else into the top three as well, and I think we could have. I don't know.
Is it going to be a Renault? Is it going to be a Renault?
I don't know. It's a circuit that needs a bit of power behind it as well. So I don't know. We could see a pink Mercedes up there potentially.
Ooh. Which one?
Potentially. I think it could be Perez. I think he's had a very good weekend, and I think he's just on a, you know, he's probably looking across at the Haas thinking, oh God, I've got to drive that next year. I better make the most of it. So, you know, being in a quick car. So, yeah, I think something could happen. He could. We'll get somebody up there.
Excellent. So, Adam, what do you think the top three are going to be?
I'm in the same mindset. I think, again, everything we said about Lewis was when he has a bad weekend, he comes back so strong you can't get anywhere near him. So I don't think there's anybody's going to win that race other than Lewis. I hope I'm not proven wrong. I do think that we're going to get somebody different in the top three. I do think it's going to be Perez, but I think it's going to be at the fault of Verstappen. So I think we're going to see a Mercedes 1-2, Mercedes 1-2, and then a pink Mercedes in three.
Oh, interesting. And Perez again, yeah?
Yeah. And I think Max is going to be pushing a little bit too hard and do something stupid that's either going to cause a problem or is going to cause a reliability issue to come forth. And they'll drop down and Sergio will be there to sweep in.
Okay, so I am going to go with, I think it's going to be Hamilton at the top step. Normally he blasts everyone away after he's had one of these messy weekends, and I think we've all agreed on that one. I'm going to go Bottas second, and I'm going to go on a out there one as well for third place, and I'm going to say it's going to be a Red Bull, but it's going to be the Red Bull of Albon.
Ooh, that's a big shout.
I think.
Big shout.
There you go. There you go. So quickly, so last weekend, last podcast, our predictions. So Rich, you had Hamilton, Bottas and Verstappen, and I had Bottas, Hamilton, Verstappen. So we got the right three on the podium, but both of us got it slightly in the wrong order.
We did, yes. We got all the correct drivers, just not necessarily in the correct order.
But that wasn't too bad. So, thanks for joining us. So, thank you very much, Rich, and thank you very much, Adam.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and so I hope everyone joins us in 2 weeks' time for the review of the Nürburgring. Say goodnight, fellas.
Good night, fellas.
It's Formula One.